Welcome to Luminescence Common Sense Spirituality, a show designed to share spiritual insights with you so that you can comprehend the universe and how it functions. You are about to experience raised consciousness. This is a place where spiritual principles are shared with the goal of assisting you to expand your understanding of both the seen and unseen worlds. Luminescence Common Sense Spirituality helps you to discern the timeless truths handed down from wise sages through the ages from the airy-fairy nonsense that is being taught today. Now, here is your host, Sharon Lynn Wyeth.
Our topic today is life beyond death. What happens when we die? How does our soul spirit move out of the body? Do atheists and people who committed suicide experience an afterlife that's different than the people who believe in God? What can we expect in the place we go next? Harps, wings, clouds? What is the great beyond like on a daily basis? How do soul groups and earthly groups interact? Does religion exist on the other side? Or is that plane of existence simply a different level of consciousness than this one? Or is it just in a different location? And why would individuals choose to return to Earth if the great beyond is so wonderful? And do we have a choice to come to Earth or someplace else? Now, these questions, as much as we can get through, are going to be answered by our incredible guest, Melinda Vale. Melinda Vale is an intuitive therapist, medium, author, lecturer, and certified hypnotherapist. And in the foreword to her book, Diary of a Mad Medium, A Guide to Understanding Karmic Profile, the famed spiritualist James von Prague praises her unique gifts and no-nonsense approach to spirituality. Now, Melinda has appeared on both local and national television and radio shows. She is also an accomplished speaker at the national level and gives workshops across the country to promote spiritual growth. Her work with the police agencies, helping to solve cold cases and donating her time to provide grief counseling, like her suicide survivor workshops, has garnered her the nickname, the medium who makes a difference. Now, as a medium, Melinda demonstrates with evidence and fact her connection to those who have died. Her methodology employed is what is known as cold readings. This is a technique where the client and Melinda have no prior relationship, and Melinda is able to give very specific information, details, and messages that fully support that she's indeed the energy field of her client, as well as communicating with the spirit of the deceased. Now, I just know that every single one of you is going to want a reading with Melinda, and they are incredible, and proof of life is absolutely given. She is fully booked till the end of the year. So if you get on her website, which is her name, Melinda Vale, and Melinda is spelled the normal way, and her last name is Vail.com, you can schedule for way into 2022, but you're going to want to do that. Melinda, welcome to Luminescence. I'm so delighted you took your time to come and join us today.
I love being with you. Thank you so much for inviting me. We always have a lot of fun when we talk to each other, don't we?
Yes, we do. And I feel very blessed that you're joining us. So, you know, there's a lot of questions about life beyond death. So what exactly happens when we die?
Well, you know, first of all, I got to say that nobody tells me it sucks over there, and I've been a medium for 30 years. So the idea of us all being afraid of dying has to be kind of thrown out the window, because it's really a pleasant kind of a feeling of bliss and connectiveness to pure love thought, so to speak. This is what I'm told. But visually what happens is we see a light, like a white light. People talk about going through a staircase or a hallway, and it's actually really the kundalini energy, which is the energy that connects the chakras together in the body, kind of coming up and out of the body and leaving through the crown. So it actually feels like we're going through a tunnel or a hallway or something. And as the kundalini kind of melds with your divine mind, which is always with you and above you and at the top of your head, then you go off and connect with someone from the other side that loves you and will come out and get you and tell you it's okay and come on. You know, hospice workers talk about dying people saying, look, can you see that person over there in the corner, or starting to talk to their moms or their dads or whomever before they cross over. So you're always greeted by people. I've had people from the other side tell me that they've had big parties, that they were happy to see old friends, that they got to see grandparents. Even people will tell me that they saw a grandparent that they only heard about, that they never met, but that they actually recognized when they got there. So it's kind of like a rebirthing process, but I think here when we're born, we cry because it's a big shock to our system to come out of that warmth and that womb. And the womb of heaven is much more pleasant to arrive to. We're not so shocked. We actually remember it and welcome it.
Great. So no bright lights like in a hospital room.
Right.
So do atheists and people who committed suicide experience an afterlife that is different or the same as people who believe in God?
Everybody goes to heaven, in my opinion. You know, the earth plane is hell. And so we, you know, are in between heaven and hell all the time as we reincarnate and figure out what our soul is trying to do to accomplish growth here. So an atheist is a person who is in a soul developmental stage, someone who dies from depression or drug addiction. We in this country don't always understand mental health the way that we should, and it is a disease, so it's the same as dying from cancer. So not the way that our religions teach us. We're not punished if we leave that way, although there's a fine line on me talking about it, because it doesn't mean that I want somebody who's feeling depressed to say, oh, well, Melinda says it'll be just fine and I'll go to heaven and get what I need as far as healing on the other side of the veil. There are karmic repercussions around that, meaning that you do have to come back to the earth plane and be faced with the same kinds of problems that you were faced with here so that your soul doesn't end it that way, but you do go to heaven. I think the only thing about atheists going to heaven is that they're in for a big surprise.
Guess what?
I think they get there and say, holy moly, geez, it's really nice here. I should have paid attention. But yeah, everybody goes to heaven because I've talked to people that have died by suicide. I have talked to people that will come to their loved ones and start talking, and their loved ones will say, well, they were an atheist here. And, you know, everybody goes to that place of kind of reconnection to the soul is the best way to describe heaven. Our soul is a silent partner here on the planet, unless you're working towards making that connection. And when we get to heaven, we always make that connection,
which is really reassuring. So I want to describe something to you, Melinda, which is how I see this, and I would like you to correct it or add to it, okay? I have
Yep.
always thought that life was like being on a freeway. We're a car on the freeway, and that's our life, and we're going forward, and there's certain exit ramps, and we're supposed to wait for a possible exit ramp before we get off the stream of life in this mm-hmm. form. And however, some people have accidents on the freeway, and I consider those suicides. And you know how all the cars build up because everybody around is inconvenienced. And so that when you choose to exit by suicide, you've inconvenienced the people around you because they're affected by your quote unquote accident or that choice of not waiting for an exit ramp. But that we have multiple choices before the freeway ends.
Well, that's a beautiful, you know, that's a really beautiful way to describe it. It's funny to me how much you and I are alike, because I use a trip analogy when I'm talking to people about the difference between, you know, what is destiny and what is free will. And I always say that if you're born in New York and it's your destiny to get to California, the mode of transportation that you take is experiential data. You could take a car, a boat, a plane, a motorcycle, walk, blah, blah. But if you don't get to California and you end up exiting, then when you get to heaven, you say, well, I got to get to California because that was my destiny, so I got to make another plan and come back down to get to California. So we kind of are using that kind of similar analogy about how things, you know, go coming and going, so to speak. And so I think that's a beautiful way to describe it, that they took an exit ramp that wasn't part of their you know, part of their trip to California, you know, and so now they have to come back and do something, you know, to make up for that kind of exiting too soon kind of thing.
Okay. So, you know, we joke about, Melinda, that in heaven there's harps and wings and clouds and, I mean, all the cartoons out there. Do you have any idea what heaven looks like or feels like once we're there that we could recognize it when we get there?
It's so interesting, the stories that I hear from people on the other side, because heaven is very, very similar to Earth. I have people tell me that they live in houses, that they live on a lake, that they have jobs. I remember during 9/11, I was supposed to go to California to work, and I was supposed to fly, but instead I drove because none of the planes were working, and a woman came to see me and said she was there to talk to her mother. And I said, well, your mother isn't here because she's working with the Heavenly Red Cross to help the souls from 9/11 cross over. I'm so sorry. And she said, oh, don't be sorry. My mother worked for the Red Cross while she was here. So, you know, I think that we take jobs on, like, a lot of times I'll talk to somebody who perhaps died by a drug addiction, and after they've done their work in heaven and done their counseling and so on, they might be a person that will help others cross over from drug addiction, part of that greeting team that says it's okay and you're in shock and come on, I'm going to help you over here. And, you know, I think that heaven is just a reflection of earth, or earth is just a reflection of heaven, only that heaven is perhaps it's more like Dorothy, you know, landing in Oz, that here on the earth, even though we see color, it will feel like black and white when we get to heaven, because everything is ever so much more beautiful and colorful there.
Oh, it's so kind of like in Field of Dreams.
Yeah,
they depicted that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I think so. Yes. From what I, you know, obviously from years of talking to people on the other side, this is what they tell me.
Right, because you're still here, which we're grateful for. So
right.
How do the soul groups and the earthly groups interact? How is that even made possible?
Ooh, okay. This is a juicy one.
Hey.
So, you know, part of you always lives in heaven, and people have a really hard time understanding that. So, you know how religious pictures depict Jesus and the saints and Mary and so on with a halo? That's because they're in their divine mind. But we all have a mind that lives above us, and that divine mind is connected to the aspects of who we are in heaven still. So it would be like an electrical current that would come into a building, and you could have different rooms lit up or different lamps lit up or different electricity lit up. And the part of you that's lit up is the only part of you that you know is lit up, and that's what's part of you here on the earth plane. But there's a whole lot of you that still has sparks in heaven, because we're really our own puppets and our own puppet masters at the same time. And so we really have this kind of process that we've created for ourselves to learn and to grow. And then we have a soul group here, which would be aunts, uncles, cousins, grandparents, parents, friends, and so on, that we've probably traveled through lifetimes with and have a recognition of, or a deja vu feeling when we first meet someone, because we may be working on the same kind of soul level that they are, or, you know, being connected in past lives and having karma with each other. But they, too, are still connected with a different kind of soul group, if you will, the aspects of the soul, because it's your spirit that's here and your whole soul is still part of the source.
So could we say that the soul is the interconnection piece between spirit and the physicality?
Yes, absolutely. That's the best way to say it, that the spark of you, that spirit of you that's in your suitcase, which is the body, you know, your body is the suitcase that houses the spirit, so to speak. You're supposed to go to heaven unpacking the suitcase, so you get up there with a lighter load, so when you join the rest of who you are, it's not so heavy. But oftentimes we pack up that suitcase and we get to heaven with a heavier load, and then the aspect of that part of us has to come back down, figure it back out.
Okay,
So I love that analogy. So as we're unpacking our suitcase, is forgiveness the key to unpacking our suitcase?
150, 1,000%. It is the key to connecting to the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit is a part of all of our spirits and all of our soul groups. And so in order to get there in a way that you have a clean transit, so to speak, and you don't have to worry about managing to come back down, you have to work on forgiveness. And the hardest person, as you know, as we all know, because we talk about this frequently when we're talking about empowerment, is the hardest person to forgive is oneself. And, you know, we have a hard time forgiving our humanness because we all have ego. We all have, you know, stuff.
Okay, so I've redefined forgiveness for me to make it easier on my humanness. And I have defined forgiveness as it is for giving. So I'm not against, I'm for giving the entire situation back to the universal laws to take care of so that I don't have to.
That's wonderful. That's a beautiful way to describe it. I really think it's about neutrality, that all events on this planet are neutral events except for the emotion that we assign to them. So when we're in a place of unforgiving, we're assigning an emotion that does not serve us, doesn't matter about the other person, doesn't serve us. So when we give that back to the universe, as you have just expressed to me, we're creating that neutrality that allows us to move forward.
Okay, so if I'm understanding you correctly, Melinda, our goal, one of our main goals here, is to become the non-emotional observer of what happens, and so you're participating without judgment, so that judgment literally is God saith the Lord, as we're being taught.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, discernment is necessary when we're here on planet Earth, because we are here and we do have an ego, right? And it's very hard to practice that level of neutrality to that point, to that degree. So my thought is that it's about us, you know, being in charge of our emotions rather than our emotions being in charge of us, that they're fruitful, that they give us something, that they're positive in certain ways. Even anger can be a direction or a map, but as long as we don't let them anchor us and we're being responsive rather than reactive, then we go back to that center core of neutrality and forgiveness and get to that place where we're above it and we're only working out of our higher power.
Yes, and quite a challenge that is for all of us, and especially at different times.
Oh boy, is it ever a challenge?
You know, does religion exist on the other side?
Does what exist? I'm sorry?
Religion.
Religion.
You know, we have all these different religions.
Religion. Does religion exist on the other side? I love that question. I'll start this way, and I have Christians that come and tell me that they have seen Jesus Christ. I have Buddhists that have come and told me that they have seen Buddha. I have Muslims that come and tell me that they have seen Muhammad. And so I think that if you're Hindu, you see Krishna, and so on, that the avatar that we choose to be connected to will still be part of your heavenly connector as you get to the other side, but that there is really no religion, that probably God is an omnist, that, you know, that all religions have some basic truths, but unfortunately, we have taken religions and made them divisions instead of connectors, which is unfortunate because I think that that's been a big issue in collective consciousness as far as karma is concerned, that we're in constant judgment of each other's religion. And I believe that it's just much more prevalent now with social media than it ever has been.
Okay, so would this be an accurate description to say that it's like we're down here, like on this huge pyramid, and every side of the pyramid has a different religion, and yet we're all going to the same place and the same point at the top of the apex of the pyramid?
That's a beautiful way to look at it. Absolutely. That's a beautiful way to look at it.
And so, and then we may get tired of climbing our own side and may transfer to another side for a while.
That's right. Well, absolutely. You know, that's why we should never be in judgment of anything, because we all take a spin on the reincarnation wheel to be all things, especially the things that we've been in judgment of in a life. Then we have to experience it. So that's why everybody should just leave each other the heck alone.
You know, that is something I have noticed in my life, is that anything that I have really had a prejudice against, it has smacked me in the face.
Mm-hmm.
For an example, I grew up in Southern California, and you had to have a gorgeous body, and you had to have tan, and you had to have whatever, right? And and yet I had a sister that was very overweight, and I used to think fat was just horrible. So as an adult, guess what I get to battle with? Mm-hmm. You know, and I've made peace with it. And once I made peace with it, it started leaving me. But I thought, you know, I look back at things and I think, this is because I judged my sister because she carried extra weight.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, now I have to live it so I can forgive it.
Yep. Isn't it interesting how much we manifest without realizing that we're manifesting while we're here? You know, if I'm talking to somebody and say, why did you manifest such and such? They always get insulted. Well, why would I manifest that? Well, I don't know. You tell me. Let's talk about it. But we don't recognize how much we manifest, that the mirror of God is so precise with no judgment whatsoever. So, you know, you put something out to the mirror of the universe, or the mirror of God, it comes right back at you in all kinds of different ways to give you the opportunity to, as you say, to forgive it and to move forward from it. And it's so interesting the way that that happens.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Mark Twain said the two most important days in your life are the day you were born and the day you find out why. The why is hidden in your name. Sharon Lynn Wyeth has created a scientific way of deciphering your name to reveal your contract for this lifetime. And your name even specifies the seven areas that are subsets of your soul's overall goal. Your name identifies who you are to both yourself and others. What does your name say about you? Contact Sharon Lynn Wyeth at info@knowthename.com for your stunning name review.
Worried about your friend but don't know how to reach out?
You can say how are you or get a fake tattoo. You can ask with an app if it works for you. You can chat with them in VR. It's all good if you think you should check in. Yeah, you should.
Whatever gets you talking.
Reach out to a friend about their mental health.
Whatever gets you talking.
Learn how you can help at seizetheawkward.org.
Yeah, well, I used to think that when people push our buttons or we're being complimented because they're actually helping us to see where we still have buttons that need work or, another viewpoint on those buttons.
Absolutely, absolutely. Honor those jackasses in your life. They're your greatest teachers. They're your greatest teachers.
So is the plane of existence of what you call heaven simply a different level of consciousness, or is it actually in a different location, or is it simultaneously where the vibration is simply different, but they're right here, and if we could attune to that vibration, we would see them right next to us? How does that work?
I think that it's the last. I think that it's a dimensional frequency that's right here with us, and in order to connect to it, you have to fine-tune an aspect of your consciousness, and that you can, you know, fine-tune that and get through that veil pretty easily. It's just a matter of being able to feel free enough to do it. And
okay,
you can't be free when you're tied down. I loved your introduction on your show, because you're not free to do it when you're bogged down by Fruit Loops and wind chimes or the la-la stuff. That is not actually the way that you do it.
Well, I just thought all of that was periphery. And, you know, it's kind of like getting to what they used to call the meat and potatoes, even though I'm not sure we want meat and potatoes today. You know, we want but we do want the basics, because
right.
I think the rest is decorative.
Right.
You know,
I agree. You know,
it's
a way of pulling wool over one's eyes, so to speak. You know, it's the same thing as religion. It's not taking responsibility for being a human being. If everything has to be out in La La Land, then you're not being responsible for being on the earth plane, and you're not really making the connection to the other side. You just think you are, if that makes sense. And I didn't mean to interrupt you, by the way.
No, that's fine. So I understand that it's very important for all of us to realize that we need to claim responsibility for every single one of our choices, conscious, unconscious, subconscious, whatever, and that we are creating everything that happens to us and who we pull to us.
Mm-hmm.
Would you want to add to that? Or, I mean,
I said it perfectly. Like, you said it perfectly. It's just that, you know, we're asleep. I don't like the word awakened, but people are using it in today's world. But we do sleepwalk through the earth plane a lot without recognizing that our spirit and our subconscious mind are there, because they're silent partners. They're so silent that you don't even know that they're there, but they're the money men. They hold the bottom line. So once you begin to kind of tap into that part of you and be aware of the choices you made with the parents you chose and the circumstances of this life cycle and how you need to reframe it, then you make the connections that allow you to go from one side of the veil to the other without assigning it into something that's woo-woo.
I love how you said how we chose our parents, because when I give the initial name reading to somebody, I always start with, why would your soul have chosen this person for a mother, and why would your soul have chosen this person for a father?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's so crucial to understand that you did this to yourself.
Right, right. Then you can't blame anybody.
Why?
That's right. Now you have to take responsibility when you realize that that's what your soul chose. And you can't walk around blaming mom for everything all day long. And you've got to say, okay, my soul chose that person for, you know, the mother that she was. You know, when I look at my own children, for example, you know, I have a child that's 7 and 9 years older than the other two children because I had some miscarriages in between. But I had him when I was under 19 years old. And the mother I was to him when I was that age was way different than the mother I was after the other children were born. And sometimes I reflect about it in regret. But then I have to reframe that and say, okay, I know he chose me for the mother that the kid that I was then, for whatever his soul growth was, and P.S., he is an amazing man, so he did good choosing that.
Oh, I want to share a story. I was taking my daughter when she was 13. I was driving my daughter from San Antonio, Texas, to Boston, Massachusetts, because she had gotten a scholarship for a very prestigious high school up there, and they give one scholarship a year, and we were so delighted she got it. My mother had said, I would like to go with you on that drive. And so, of course, she flew from California and flew out to Texas, and we started the drive. Every time we passed a sign that said an antique store, she would start throwing a fit if we didn't pull off the road and let her go to that antique store, which made our trip horrendously long.
But what we noticed was that if we went into the store with her, she took more time. And if we sat in the hot car and waited with the windows down, she was faster. So we're almost at Boston. And my daughter from the back seat of the car looks at me while mom's in the antique store and says, "You know what, Mom? I've done something a lot better than you have." And I looked at her and I said, "We all want our children to be improved versions. You know, we want you to be better than us. So what have you done already that you think is better than me?" And she goes, "Picking, Mom."
Oh, that's hilarious. That's funny. Oh, gosh. You know, people, again, you know, when you say to them, you picked that mother, that father, especially when the mother or the father was horrendously abusive or whatever, they're like, "What was I thinking?" But they're also the strong people. They're the ones, only strong people come for, you know, life coaching or seek out spirituality or go get counseling. There's strength in that. It's the opposite of what people think, you know.
Well, I always want to know why, because if you understand why you chose something and what the purpose was, I think the learning comes easier.
Agreed.
You know, and then you don't make the same quote-unquote mistake twice because you don't need to relearn the lesson. You got it.
Agree. Absolutely agree. Absolutely.
You know, like when I do something that I look at and I think, why in the world would I have done this? You know, and then I start asking, where's the silver lining? What did my soul wish to learn from this experience? And I keep asking until I get an answer. You know, and that answer may shift and change over time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like to look at the whole karmic profile, meaning that it's not just the parents I like to look at. I like to look at the generations, the grandparents, you know, even great-grandparents, if you have knowledge of them. It really helps you understand those patterns that kind of weave through families so that you can shift and change those patterns.
You mean something like an abusive thing that every parent is abusive coming down through, and then you can see what it is?
Or alcoholism, abuse, molestation, you know, the things that come down through families, through the family line. And when you talk to me about religion, I have to say to you that certain things come down through vibrational frequencies religiously, too, interestingly, depending on. So your soul chooses whatever religion that you're going to honor by your birth, too, if your parents were very religious. There's something you're supposed to learn there, too, as well as the generational patterns. It all kind of counts. Where you are in the country counts as far as your soul's learning process, or in the world, because different places in this country have a different vibration, different places in the world have a different vibration. So it's all about vibrational frequency and how your soul is going to understand itself and move past third dimensional frequency into that higher essence, depending on what you've chosen.
So I read somewhere, and I thought, oh, I can't wait to ask Melinda about this, that we start wherever we left off. Each lifetime starts wherever we left off. And I was thinking there's got to be some growth on the other side, so we're not starting exactly where we left off. But do we start pretty much similarly to where we left off the last time we were here?
Well, I don't have the answer to that exactly. I will tell you that I have people that are passed away that come and say they're in counseling, they're in classes, they're, you know, in, you know, working on things. So I think there is growth on the other side and, you know, some movement. I know we have a pre-life planning conference, but I would think that we're a little bit more than Groundhog Day on it. I think that our soul has to pick up something each lifetime that doesn't set us down into the place that we've left off. When I do past life regression work with people, and they see where they left off in a past life, they didn't exactly come back into this life that way.
Okay, so that's good. So that
we're
growing where we are. We have that opportunity for growth wherever.
Yeah, I think the growth moves between heaven and earth.
So why do individuals choose to return to Earth if the great beyond is so wonderful?
Well, because the here on the Earth plane, you know, in metaphysical worlds, we teach a lot about duality, but to me it's more about separation than duality, although it may sound the same. But the separateness of understanding that we are still part of the whole, somehow we separated that out and we're still on a pathway of trying to find ourselves back to the whole. And the only way to really explain it is in religious terms, unfortunately, because I really think there's so many beautiful aspects to the Earth plane that it's hard to call it hell. But, you know, it is the giant classroom. It is the place that the soul learns that it's part of the whole, that in order to become part of the whole, that forgiveness is absolutely the key. And once you work through that aspect of understanding your soul, then you become one with the whole. I also think we incarnate into other worlds and other places. I have chosen a long time ago not to really teach about that, although I have an awareness. But I think there are other places besides the Earth plane that our souls can go to learn and to grow once we've finished with this and to move until we're part of the source. But I think it's all about the learning of the soul, knowing that it's part of the whole.
Okay, so in our times now, which I think is giving us a great opportunity with what's happening in the world today to look inside, decide what's really important to us and how do we choose to consciously live our lives. And we hear a lot about this being the quote unquote end times. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I think of it as the end times of duality. And so we have this great opportunity to come back into oneness and still be in physical form.
Mm-hmm.
Would you address your thoughts on that?
Well, I just love the way you said it, number one, because, again, you and I are very like-minded in so many ways. You know, this has been a historical event. The pandemic has been a historical event. There are other times in history that pandemics have wiped out half the world's population, actually, but because of social media, because of the political environment, you know, we've made it into something that it doesn't necessarily have to be, and it's become very dividing in its nature. However, in so many ways, you know, because of the way that the Earth works on the yin and the yang and the up and the down and the, you know, the male and the female, the division then comes back and creates also connection. So we have to wait for the process of the division to finish itself out so that the reconnection, the collaboration, the ability to move through it, where we're all connected to one another and stay in our conscious world, is happening. If you talk to crystal children are usually about 14 years or younger. They are the most interesting generation coming up because they do not think in terms of division. They do think in terms of collaboration. So hopefully as this generation comes up, it will reunite us as one human race instead of separate us by, you know, religion and ethnicity and all of the things that divide us right now. And that, I'm not saying a one world order, because that certainly scares people, because then they think it's a Big Brother thing, and that's not necessarily what this means. But a world where we are able to help and honor each other would be a great outcome of all of this.
When I was still in the classroom, and we always had to fill out paperwork, or the kids did the first day of school, and I would tell them, don't get ahead of me. There's a trick question on here that you're not going to recognize until I get there. And then when it would say, what race are you? I would say, here's the trick question. Go down to the other mark, and you check other, and you write human.
Mm-hmm.
And you let everybody know that we are part of the human race, and we don't have these subdivisions or whatnot. And I don't care where I taught, the principals would come talk to me and say, that's our funding. You need to get them to do that right. And I said, they did do it right.
They did do it right.
Then there's something wrong with our
That's right, for sure.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Are you feeling lost, confused, absolutely clueless? No way out, over, under, or through? Then it's time to have the Light Keepers, through their conduit, Sharon Lynn Wyeth, guide you by shining their light, illuminating the right path for you. Let Sharon share the wisdom of the ancient masters to guide you on what is coming next for you and to show you the silver lining in your current circumstances. Contact Sharon Lynn Wyeth at info@knowthename.com for a joyful, info-packed Lightkeepers session.
Melissa from Michigan. I work an extra part-time job serving lunch at my child's school, but I still can't afford to put food on our table.
Daniel from California. Choosing whether to pay the rent or pay to fix the car to get to work doesn't leave us with much at all. Now we can't even pay for meals.
Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Okay, so with everything you've learned, Melinda, from talking with people on the other side and from your own spiritual growth, is there any understanding or comprehension that you just wish everybody had because it would help them in their own growth and in their own life?
Yes, exactly what you have already expressed so eloquently, forgiveness. That's the key to everything. And doing the right thing when it's not the easy thing. And unfortunately, people are lazy and they do the easy thing instead of the right thing. And so doing the right thing, being able to forgive, it doesn't matter how much you go to church, how many prayers you say, how much you're on your knees, whatever. If you walk out of that church or you walk out of that prayer and you are still holding grudges or being inappropriate with other people or being in judgment or calling out names or saying things rudely to each other on social media, then those prayers do you absolutely not one hill of beans of good, because that doesn't matter. What matters is staying in integrity, doing the right thing, being in forgiveness, being in a state of allowance, making sure that you are honoring yourself and your own soul purpose by being true to yourself, taking responsibility for your own humanness, and trying to correct that part of you that you may need to correct.
And that sounds like it would be very challenging, but as somebody rises to the highest of what they currently understand, do you feel like it just gets easier with practice over time, even though it's still can be hard?
I do. I do think it gets easier with time and practice. I do. I think it gets easier with daily meditation. I think it gets easier with vulnerability, to be vulnerable enough to say to someone, I really didn't mean that, I screwed up on that, or I'm sorry about that, or whatever. You know, each time that you're allowing yourself the vulnerability to forgive yourself for something and to talk to another person, you're creating that energy of connection to your higher power.
Would you mind briefly talking to us about prayers and the effectiveness of prayers from your understanding?
Yeah, I think that prayers are energy. Thoughts are real energy. Prayers are real energy. However, you know, there's an old country song, Thank God for Unanswered Prayers, because sometimes our higher power or our subconscious mind is in conflict of what our ego mind is saying. You know, if you're trying to pray, say, about, I want to be debt free in a year, and then you end up going bankrupt, that was an answer to your prayers, but that wasn't exactly what you meant, you know. So you have to be pretty clear about understanding that prayers are really gratitude affirmations. Those are the things that work energetically the best as prayers, being grateful for what you have, being an honor that you're asking for your higher good. If you're praying for someone else, let's just say we're in a prayer circle together and we're praying for someone that has cancer. We don't really want to pray for that person to get well here on the earth plane, because they may get well in a handicapped way. You want to pray for whatever is best for their higher good, and so they may get the healing on the other side. It doesn't mean that God didn't answer your prayers. It means that God answered your prayers in a way that you misunderstood. But thoughts are real energy. Prayers are real energy. I am a Catholic. I still practice my Catholicism. I still go to Mass. I like it. I'm a Franciscan Catholic. I just like the ritual of it. I feel good when I'm there. I will often listen to the Rosary on YouTube on my way in to work, not because I think the Catholics are better than anybody else, but because it resonates in my subconscious mind and puts out a goodness, a good vibrational frequency. And I will perhaps say a rosary that I'll dedicate to a client that's struggling or whatever. And it just, to me, means that I'm doing something with my vibration for somebody else, if that makes sense.
Oh, that is just fascinating that you do that on the way to work. When I'm in the car, I imagine the light energy and God's grace and love coming through me, or to me and through me and out, like huge windshield wipers, so that everybody gets cleansed as I pass them on the road or they pass.
I love it. I love it. I love it. You know, and that's the beauty of when you ask me about different religions. God doesn't care what tools we use. We can use, you know, if you believe that standing on your head in the corner of your room for 5 minutes will help you get to heaven or help someone else or give something good to somebody else, then that will work, because that's a tool that you're using that you believe in.
I think that's wonderful. Melinda, at the very beginning, we said how to get a hold of you, but would you tell us again how to get a hold of you? I've already let everybody know that you've got quite a waiting list that they need to get on the schedule for 2022 if they plan on getting
thank
in.
You. I have a wonderful young man. He's my assistant. His name is Izzy, I-Z-Z-Y. He's very pleasant to talk to, and his number is 480-755-0222, and he does the very best he can to accommodate people and get them in and into the schedule, and so just give Izzy a call. You can jump on the website, but we don't actually do appointments on the website. It's too complicated. My schedule is too complicated, and so we really think that it's better to talk to Izzy.
Okay, so let's give us that number again. It's
480-755-0222. But do jump on the website, because there's some cool stuff on there. Yeah, you know, that it's fun to look at the website. There's some things there, and you can jump on my YouTube channel, see me do some readings with people and do some talks, and so that people can see what I look like and that kind of thing. But Izzy's the guy to talk to for an appointment.
I want to thank you for joining us like I always do. I always appreciate the fact that you take your time to listen to Luminescence. Next week, our special guest will be Susan Rowland again. She will be back. And our main topic is going to be discernment. How do we garner discernment? How do we tell if it's accurate or not? So our topic will be discernment next week. Thank you.
at her. No wounds or imperfections, just beauty and its glow. Her laughter and her heart, a reflection of her soul. Of her, the light slightly dimmed, her reflection unseen, and all that she knew.